Sometimes you hear these songs and you sing them and you realize how much you need to hear them. And with the message today, definitely, it's a good reminder of some of the songs we sang today, especially Light in the Darkness. I'm going to go a little bit longer today, if you could bear with me, Don. Seriously, I do want to go a little longer, but just poke him if he kind of fades over. We're in a series I've entitled Echoes and Whispers in part three, because learning to hear from God is fundamental to our spiritual life. We learned 2 weeks ago in the life of Samuel that prayer really is the secret move. God initiates prayer. He initiates. Last week we looked at Elijah, because when God approaches us, when we're learning to listen, he often asks thought-provoking questions. That's a good sign you're hearing from the Lord. And he also can expose blind spots that we have that we need to hear. Today, I want to look at an unsung hero, a person that maybe you don't always think of. He was an outstanding worship leader and dynamic, I think, family man. I think he was an MVP dad. From what little we know, it sure seems that way. But he speaks to us today, his life, because there are times when God seems like he's on mute. When he's on mute. Now, the word picture I've given you guys is this: as I want you to picture prayer like a mountain, where you reach moments where you're at this certain peak, and at that peak, it's just awe-inspiring. That's like intimacy with God. We get to those places, and we say like David, right? One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to seek him in his temple always. So there's a moment in mountaintop experience, physical, where we go, look at the beauty. That's what prayer is at its peak moments. But it's also the summits. The summits are those, oh, we made it this far. There's this success we have. And all of a sudden, it's like Elijah, where bam, things change real quick. And we've got to recognize that. How do you deal with that? And prayer is also those daily steps where we just daily learn discipline, right? My son just did part of the Appalachian Trail. You know, just pressing each day, you know, and he did further than he thought. We just, he was picked up the other day. We were supposed to, but he got someone else. And then there are also those valleys, right? Those valleys that are dark and hard. And this is where David said, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me. So let's read Psalm 88 and take a look at Haman and his prayer in Psalm 88. Psalm 88. You could call him He-Man, or it's Haman. Modern day, what's his name? Chris Hinesworth. No, this is not Chris Hinesworth. All right, this is his prayer. O Lord, the God who saves me, day and night I cry out before you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry, for my soul is full of trouble, and my life draws near the grave. I'm counted among those who go down to the pit. I'm like a man without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, who you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily upon me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. You have taken me from my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. I call to you, O Lord, every day. I spread out my hands to you. Do you show your wonders to the dead? Do you, to those who are dead, rise up and praise you? Is your love declared in the grave, your faithfulness in destruction? Are your wonders known in the place of darkness? Or is your righteous deeds in the land of oblivion? But I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? From my youth I have been afflicted and close to death. I have suffered your terrors, and I am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken my companions and loved ones from the darkness of my closest friend. That, ladies and gentlemen, is scripture. That is an honest cry. I don't know if you've heard the true story. It's an amazing story, touching the void. It's a true story of two climbers that were climbing the Andes in South America. Amazing story. It's a movie as well. Joe Simpson and Simon Yates were climbing partners, and they got up 21,000 feet in blistering conditions, right? But here's what happened to Joe. He slipped, fell off the ledge, and he's tied to his partner. And this is what you do in the mountain climbers. And because of that, Simon is holding him, and he's trying to pull him up. He can't pull him up. He's trying to lower him. He doesn't know how far he's fallen. He doesn't know where the ground is. And they're there for hours, agonizing. And then darkness falls on the mountain, and they're in these dark moments. And Yates had this moment where he just didn't know what to do. He was plunging close to his own death. And he did what climbers say you never do. He cut the cord and let go of Joe. At that point, Yates said a soul darkness he kind of entered into. And as he returned to camp, he said, I was consumed with guilt and grief and personal disgust. And he was in the base camp for about 3 days just pondering all this. And as he was getting ready to leave, who walks up but Joe? Joe had survived. Amazing story. He had crawled through starving and severe frostbitten, found the reserve to make it back from those dark hours. It's an epic story, and it's worth looking into. How did he get there, right? We've all faced our moments of darkness, right? Those moments. But there's other ways of darkness, right? Daylight savings time. I don't call it that. I call it daylight stealing time, right? Well, I like a lot of sunlight, you know, and this feels like Seattle of the East Coast sometimes, you know? But then there's dropping the garbage off at the end of the driveway, and my sons would go, Dad, I don't want to do it. And I said, why? There's bears out there, Dad, there's bears. We've seen bears, so I get it, right? They're afraid of the dark. I've been in Norway and Alaska, right? And they have long seasons of darkness. How they do it, it's astounding. In Norway, they don't see the sun for many, many days. However, there's a physical darkness, yes, but there's also a spiritual darkness. And we just read the prayer of Haman. Now, Haman, listen closely, was King David's appointed national worship leader. What David left for us is a place of worship where worship was happening 24/7, 365, right? Where worship and praise was happening. And so David appointed Haman to head this up. And so I'm reminded of Peter Gregg. You may not know him. He's a British pastor. Started houses of prayer throughout the world 24/7 where they pray. 24/7, they're praying. Amazing. Anyway, this is Haman in 1 Chronicles 25, verses 4 to 6. Says this, as for Haman, from his sons, and there's 14 of them that are named, all these were sons of Haman, the king's seer. That's a prophet. He sees things, God shows him, and then he declares it. That was Haman. They were given him through the promises of God to exalt him. God gave Haman 14 sons and 3 daughters. All these people were under the supervision of their father for the music of the temple of the Lord. Now that's a family. You thought the Von Trapp family had something, right? We watched Sound of Music every year growing up with the kids. We loved that movie. This was an entire family, like Amy, right? Just musical, right? What a family. Haman understood the Lord's presence. And so let's take a look at this psalm and derive several insights into spiritual darkness, right? When God doesn't seem real or evident, or he doesn't, you can't hear his voice. And so I want to apply by asking three questions, then apply, or ask three questions and apply, how do you walk through darkness? How do you walk through darkness? Darkness is that sense where you don't sense the presence of God, where you just, it's hard to hear from him. Life is cluttered. We're plagued by doubt, maybe self-doubt, and God just doesn't seem to be there. Spiritual darkness is when you feel like you're in a confusion. You don't know what's your thoughts and his thoughts. and deep questions rise up in us, and prayers seem to go unanswered. Your faith gets seasick, your love goes into hibernation, and your hope is on life support. Spiritual darkness is at winter season, and we ask this, it seems like my prayers don't pass the ceiling, right? That's the expression people use. And so I want to ask three questions. What might be contributing factors of spiritual darkness? Second, what needs to be our posture when we're in spiritual darkness? And then third, what are the benefits of a season of spiritual darkness? So the first question, what might be contributing factors of spiritual darkness? Haman starts out really well here. God is his North Star. God, you saved me, and God, you can save me. It's always good when you're in darkness to declare the truth, even though it doesn't feel that way. Lord, you're the God who saves me. He starts out. But the lights are switched off. Let's look at five factors of possible, as he talked about. Factor number one, your soul is just overloaded. It's just overloaded, right? Verse 3, my soul is full of trouble. Like it was to the brim. He was tapped out. Like, I've had enough, right? It's where a 5-pound problem, it feels like 50 pounds, right? And it's like you Netflix binge, and you're trying to get away from it, but then after the binge is over, it's right there again. You are full of trouble. Cars break down, kids lose their grip, divorce enters the married conversation, tax season comes and we feel sour, friends say harmful things, you lose your job, you lose money, it just piles up, all right? And Haman's pot of coffee of refreshment has moved from hazelnut to gravel nut. It is just, for him. And he says this, who are cut off from your care? He feels like the care of God is distant. Did you ever reach that point? Listen to his prayer. My eyes are dim with grief. Grief has a dimming effect on not being able to see God. In other words, our sorrows are louder than our meaningful connection. A second factor I think I see here is spiritual discipline. Look at verse 6. You've put me in the darkest depths. Who put him there? His father-in-law? His mother-in-law? No, God put him there. You have put me in the darkest depths. Spiritual discipline from God can be very hard. A.W. Tozer said, when God wants to use a man greatly, he has to bring him through pain. Joseph was that way. It was all part of his preparation to be a leader. He prays, why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? What he's saying is that there's the omnipresence of God, but then there's the manifest where God makes himself known. Your face, your intimacy, I can't sense you at all. Haman is there. It's very difficult. No whispers, no pokes, no nudges, no echoes, just crickets. Factor three might be this, a loss of core friends. Haman has had a relational fallout. Look at verse 8. You have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. It's one thing when we lose friends that are moving, right? That was a beautiful reflection. Thank you. Thank you. When they move, right? But it's another thing when something happens. I think this may be what happened. A couple years later, Absalom tried to take over the kingdom from David. But that was underway for years, right? So possibly Absalom had convinced some of Haman's friends and leaders, join me. And later, and therefore he became Haman to them, repulsive. I mean, that's pretty hard stuff. And I know what it's like to feel betrayed by a leader. I've been there. It's hard. Loss of core friends. Factor four, hard memories are revisited. Look at verse 15. From my youth, I have suffered and been close to death. When you're in those dark times, like the memories come back, and it's like it's all brought to the forefront of your mind, like, oh, here we go again, right? This is what it's like. And then factor number five, you become a relational island. Look at verse 18. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend. Sounds like a Paul Simon song of the 70s, right? Darkness, what does he say? Oh, wait. Hello, darkness, my old friend. You've come to me again. Paul, you sing that. I can't sing that. You do the leading of worship and I'll preach, okay? We'll keep it that way. But you get the point. He's a relational island. Martin Luther King Jr. was a strong leader in the civil rights movement. Amazing. His defining moment, though, came in Montgomery, Alabama. He tells the story of one of his sermons, God is Able. It was in Montgomery, of course, if you remember, if you lived back then, the bus protests and the threats of his life. As the weeks pass by, he talks about how the protests and the threats against him came in earnest. He said, I felt myself growing in fear. In a late hour one night, he was awakened by an angry call which said this to him, listen, we've taken all we want from you. Before next week, you'll be sorry you ever came to Montgomery. He says he could not sleep. This is a tough leader, and he could not sleep. All the fears came to surface, he said, and I was exhausted. Like Haman, terrors filled my soul. This is the same with Martin Luther. And he says this, quote, I'm here taking a stand for what I believe is right, but now I'm afraid that people are looking to me for leadership, and if I stand before them without courage, they too will falter. I'm at the end of my powers. I've come to the point where I can't face it alone. And he describes in a beautiful way the presence of the divine. God came to him and whispered, stand up for righteousness, Mark. Stand up for truth. God will be your soul, be with you by you forever. He said, almost at once my fears began to pass from me, and the outer situation remained the same, but God had given me an inner calm. He met the Lord. Three nights later, his home was bombed, and he said this, I accepted the word of the bomb calmly. My experience with God had given me new strength and trust. I now know that God is able to give us the inner resources to face the storm of life. Great testimony, isn't it? What are you facing? Where are you at? Is it heavy? Are you hearing from him? Is it quiet? Is it dark? Is it difficult? God is able to meet you in that darkness. In your parenting, in your marriage, in your job, he can. He wants to. He will. I've seen it time and time again. So the second question then is, what needs to be our posture in spiritual darkness? If we're experiencing darkness, how should we live, right? How should we face the next day and the next? What's our plan? What should we do? What do we see in the life of Haman? He says this, look at his posture. O Lord, the God who saves me, day and night I cry out before you. Haman is engaged. He is hot after God. Day and night, he is going after God. What happens, I see, with leaders, and even happened within my own soul, is that when you're not getting the answers, and it just gets so heavy, prayer becomes laborious. And it actually seems like it puts us in the opposite direction. But he is resistant. He continues to day and night, he's going after God full throttle. The word cry is this idea where you're indicating the depth of his longing. I cry. This is a national worship leader, right? Reached a point where he's just crying out in the depths. He had a posture of daily surrender. Verse 9, I call to you, O Lord, every day I spread out my hands to you. One of the songs that has ministered to me is Hillsong, I Surrender. It just helps me to keep surrendering the very things I carry in my life, things that confuse me, things that I don't understand. And so I'm amazed at this posture that he has. This posture, one of the reasons why it's hard for us to be in a posture in spiritual darkness where we're going through this is that we've not learned to bond with God in the previous times of glimpses of darkness. Those are opportunities to bond with him emotionally and relationally so that we know where we're going with him. I remember Rick and Kay Warren, those of you who remember, the pastor in California, 40 Days with God and the various things he's written. Rick, his son battled mental health issues. And so when his son took his life, I was following their story. They took a six-month sabbatical. He and Kay went to counseling, spent a lot of time in prayer and just time alone. But Kay said something very key to me. She said this, I had two boxes. One box were the prayers of my struggle, like Psalm 88. But the other box were promises of God that I would read. And she would go through this every day, back and forth, back and forth. And I find that many of us only have one box. It's our anguish. We've got to have the promises. And Haman is doing this. He's pressing in. Amazing. So how do you pray? How do you pray like this? I tell people, start where you are. God, I don't know how to pray. That's good. Why do you not know how to pray? And I kind of just coach them through this time of praying. Sometimes I find if you just write out your prayer, people will come back to me and say, Pete, I wrote my prayer out and stuff came out that I didn't even know was there. I said, yep, that's why we write it out. Look at, you know, Haman's honesty. You've put me in the lowest pit. You have taken from me my closest friends. You've taken my companions and loved ones from me. Darkness is my closest friend. While we were worshiping, I was just struck by a story that I remember that I wasn't planning on. John Stumbo is our president. You guys know John Stumbo is our president of the Alliance? He's a good man. He's been in darkness before. I'll never forget John, when we were working at the national office together, I was doing a 40-day fast, and when I finished, John said, can I talk with you? I said, sure, man. You know, and he said, what did you learn in that 40-day fast? And as I'm talking, tears are coming down his face. I go, that's the hunger of God and that man. He was VP at the time. Then John went through his sickness, and it was a darkness he battled. And one of the things that got him through was Moses. When Moses was in a situation that was difficult, God comes to him, and there's a darkness around Moses, and God says to him, come in this darkness. I'm here too. Not that there's any darkness in God, right? But I'm the God of darkness too, is what he learned. Right. Powerful, powerful testimony of God coming through. Ellen and I have worked with pastors who've and their spouses that have been through some dark times, very difficult times. And we grieve with them, we love on them, we walk with them. And I'll never forget one couple. They poured their hearts out, and God just gave a sign that he was still present. And it so lifted their spirits in that moment. It was a beautiful time. And he's on his first sabbatical right now, and I think he's happy as a clam. So what are the benefits of being in spiritual darkness? There are benefits. There are benefits. I believe that God had brought Haman through the dark night so that he could speak to us today, right? It's become scripture. Right? So in Psalm 88, we don't always see how he got through it, but we do know that he was David's leader to continue to help get through things, because David would face his own darkness. And so, notice he started the prayer, O Lord, the God who saves me, right? It could be, I don't know what you're facing, a painful divorce, a loss of a child, unexpected bankruptcy, a broken friendship, infertility, adoption that never happened. I mean, each of us face something difficult. And so when it's dark, here's one of the benefits. You really begin to find out if God's promises are true, because they are. Because they're based on his name, right? And because of that, God stands by what he says. Philippians 1:6, he that began this work in you will continue it until the day of Jesus Christ. And that means through your darkness. What are the benefits? We're weaned away from unhealthy attachments. This one is hard for us. There are spiritual consolations that we find in life and with God, from the things of God and not God himself, from the hand of God, not the heart of God. And sometimes we look more to the hand than his heart, and sometimes he removes the hand of provision so that he gets us to move to his heart. And so we're kind of weaned from unhealthy attachments. And this can be very difficult. I love Jim Elliot, one of my heroes on the mission field. He said this, he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And when God challenged that with me, when Elle and I were dating for 7 years, 4 years apart, I went to Crown College, she went to school in New York, and he kept reminding me, he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. I did not want to lose that girl. You've seen her. Would you want to? I would not want to lose that woman. You know, and so that was a very hard lesson, unhealthy attachments. Second benefit, we become more in touch and how much we need God. You know, I need thee, oh, I need thee. Every hour I need thee. We're reminded how much we really need God. Haman is going through this. He's crying out day and night, praying without ceasing. He's this locomotive, I need you, I need you. He's being strengthened in the pain. What I would say thirdly is God becomes amplified when we become desperate enough for his presence. When you become desperate, there's a strengthening that God brings us through that can only happen in those kinds of moments. We see this in the life of David. I think a fourth benefit is this, it prepares you to lead in greater challenges ahead. I think, this is just my thought, I think God brought Haman through this because Absalom was coming, so Haman might be ready to help David because they worked together. They were teammates. And so it prepares you for the challenges ahead. Jeremiah experienced this. Remember his prayer? And God says to him, if you've not learned to run with men, how are you going to run with horses? You got to get ready. In other words, God was preparing him for the fall of Jerusalem. Right? So parents, here's my hope for you. If it's hard for you when the kids are young, it is hard. Demands and needs and, you know, you're always being pulled and they need this, they want this, and you're thinking, honey, I need a break, you know. And you think of the things. Some of the things that you go through is in preparation so you're ready for the next season. If you run now with small children, you'll be able to run when they're older. Learn now the lessons. Remember them, write them down, because you're going to need them, you know, in the next season, as Elle and I have been working through our own challenges. Here are some tips to listen to the whispers of God in the dark nights. A few tips for you. There's a time to listen to God and just be quiet. And that's hard. The spiritual discipline of silence is very hard. I remember this one time. I was just like, I want you, God. I'm just going to listen for you. And for almost an hour, there was a Beatles song going through my head. Oh, blah, dee, oh, blah, da, life goes on, la, da. And I'm laughing. I'm going, I am so distracted, Lord. Just, I'm going to be quiet. Oh, blah, dee. And sometimes I think he allows those things just to test us. How much do you want me to make you stronger, right? Learn to listen to God. Second, I would say is learn to write those prayers, but make it private so you feel like you have expression. And then when you're ready, share with a friend. And so often I do this. I help people write a psalm of lament. Because listen, look what he said. You've taken my companions and loved ones from me. The darkness is my closest friend. Matt Radman is a great worship leader of one of my best buds. When Matt was like, this is like almost 30 years ago, he said to me, this guy is going to be a great worship leader. This guy's got the gift. Another mentor of mine, we were together, and Matt came out with a new song. And he said, that song he just wrote, that came out of pain. After the song, Matt shared that that was as a result of God bringing him through a very difficult sexual abuse situation that Matt was in when he was a kid. So you'd be amazed how God can redeem us in those hard times. What I would say as a tip is learn from others who've lived to tell about the darkness. There are great biographies out there I could recommend to you. John Piper has written called The Swans Are Not Silent. It's a series, and he walks you through various people that have had, you know, all their contributions to the body of Christ. But he talks about this one, The Smile of God is Hidden. The Hidden Smile of God, right? He titles it and talks about three. William Cowper was a worship leader. The depths of darkness this guy came, but out of that came these incredible hymns. Amazing, amazing. I just conclude when I think about this psalm and times of darkness. I remember the story of Mother Teresa. About 15 years ago, her private journals were made public, and it was called Come Be My Light. I had read this, this was about over 20 years ago. When I read her private journals in this book, I had this question. Did she really know Jesus? Did she know the Lord? Then I went through my own spiritual darkness, and I went, oh yeah, she knew the Lord. Because what she talked about, I was going through. And I'm going, wow. And then her work meant so much to me. She said this, in my soul, I feel just this terrible pain of loss of God, not wanting me, of not being God, God not really existing. She said, Jesus, and she wrote, Jesus, please forgive my blasphemy. I've been told to write everything. She's being mentored, right? Write everything down. And she's writing it down. She goes, Jesus, I don't want to write this down. I love her struggle, her honesty. That darkness that surrounds me on all sides, I can't lift my soul to God. No light or inspiration enters my soul. I speak of love for souls, of tender love for God. Words pass through my lips, and I long with a deep longing to believe in them. What do I labor for? If there is no God, there is no soul. If there's no soul, then Jesus, you also are not true. Heaven, and what emptiness, not a single thought of heaven enters my mind, for there is no hope. I'm afraid to write all these terrible things that pass through my soul. They must hurt you. I don't pray any longer. I utter words of community prayers, and in my utmost to get out of every word the sweetness it has to give, but my prayer of union is not there no longer. I no longer pray. My soul is not one with you. Yet when I'm alone in the streets, I talk to you for hours of my longing for you. How intimate are those words, and yet so empty, for they leave me far from you. Eventually, she heard the whispers of God, and she came out of her darkness. So here's what I want to say about the Soul Care Retreat coming up. There was a season in my life where I entered a darkness that I just did not hear from God very much, and it was a very difficult season of my life. And out of that, God met us and brought us out. But I wanted to understand, why was I not able to go to the deeper parts of intimacy with Jesus in that time? Like, what? I want to understand. And so I went to get my doctorate in the area of leadership development, but also of soul care. I want to be able to do this, take care of my inner life with Jesus. And out of that, eight principles came, and I'm only going to talk about three of them with you on the Soul Care Retreat. Identity, you got to know who you are in darkness. Secondly, you've got to break the patterns that you've had in your family. And so I did some research on my family. Seven family members I interviewed for 2 hours each in five areas. It was purely an interview. And every single one of them, I asked them after the interview. It was just an interview. No teaching, no correcting. I wasn't going to tell anybody else about it. I said, what was this like? And they all generally said this word, wow, that was cathartic, Pete. Just to talk to someone for 2 hours about my history. I said, yep. And then I put it all together and I went, okay, I need to break this, I need to break this, I need to break this, I need to break this. And I'm still trying to break stuff. It's a lot of work. So that's going to be the Soul Care Retreat, kind of a light subject. You should be able to bring a lawn chair and a cup of coffee and we'll just have a grand old time together. Yeah, some bandages. There'll be healing time. We're going to pray together, okay? So we'll be able to process together. What do I mean by that? I'll teach. I'll sit you together in groups of three to process together. And then as a group, individually with your group, you'll pray together to start to walk through your own challenges. And that's what we'll do. Amen? Haman's a good example. Isn't he a unsung hero? Isn't it amazing what he gave us? Right? Tremendous leader.